Hi, you have tuned into Paradigm Shifters. What is paradigm shifting? A paradigm shifter, from my perspective, is someone who's making a difference in the collective with some innovative, usually intuitive kind of progress in the world. And my paradigm shifter guest today is Randy Masters. And Randy's, well, I want to say I'm wearing a beautiful piece of jewelry which Randy has designed, and it's designed for moving energy a certain way, making me beautiful, but I'm more or less energetically beautiful. But Randy's bigger, it's really your bigger commitment, isn't it, is to sound, to music, to sending vibrations out into the world and helping people heal themselves and their environment. So welcome to the show, Randy Masters.
Thank you.
So I'd like Thanks, you to talk Monica. About sound healing and what it all means. I know that I mentioned my jewelry first, because it's also a healing tool, is it not?
It's about, yes, it is. It's about resonant living, okay. Which is what I call my company, and living resonantly. So jewelry pieces that we wear that remind us of a higher matrix of thought and put out a nice vibration into our field and something that we can broadcast and use to amplify our thoughts and intentions, all of that.
Okay.
I'd be careful in using the word healing. I mean, I think that it, if it tunes you up to a higher degree, some of the grosser things might drop away, mm-hmm. especially hopefully the preferred grosser things that we'd like to drop away by, you know, cruising at a little higher altitude, yet still being grounded.
So these are tools. These mm-hmm. are tools that kind of move in with our frequencies and help our frequency move to a higher level, right?
Yes.
So whether it's jewelry, whether it's art, or whether it's, in this case, sound, we're having a huge impact on ourselves when we play with your toys.
Yes, I knew somebody that had a company. It was called Tools for Fools. I just really like that.
That sounds
like
fun.
The fool on the tarot card. You know, it's probably
great.
The freest of the bunch.
He's into surrender, too, isn't he?
Yeah, so I think like that, you know.
Well, I'm sitting at Randy's home here in Santa Cruz and being surrounded by some of the most beautiful pieces of musical instruments. They're, what do you call these? Chimes?
Yeah, desktop chimes, because they're designed to sit up on a table or a desk or an altar or something like that.
And then over here on my left, we have humongous desktop. These are not for anybody's desktop. Most of our desks are not that big.
Yeah, it's not. It's the kind of the most sound sonic paperweight.
Yeah.
You know, for the executive, you know, that's got everything.
Capital
no,
P paper.
They don't have these for their paperweights.
So what he's got here is these desktop, what do we call them, chimes. Mm-hmm. How many are there? Three?
There's nine
six,
in that one, because that's the rainbow. That's the nine colors of the rainbow. When the sunlight goes through a quartz prism, it actually makes nine distinctive key vibrational signatures that are measured. The reason there's nine instead of seven is because there's two reds and two greens, two different distinct shades. So that's where the nineness comes
in. So you're talking color, and I'm talking sound here. Mm-hmm. So how do those go together?
That one, I took the data from the measurement of the rainbow in color wavelengths, and then doing a little science dance with my calculator, turned that into sound and put it in an octave that it was a good, pleasing octave to listen to for chime purposes. And therefore, there was a conversion from the medium of light in nanometers or angstroms per second into hertz or cycles per second. So we can hear, like it says on my business card, hear color.
Okay.
Literally, that's my signature piece.
Well, even though I love your explanation, I don't really understand it, but I do understand the feelings I get from a lot of these tools that you've made. So I'm thinking maybe you want to play some.
Can I play something on that rainbow one?
Yeah.
I'll play the whole thing, and then I'm going to play.
I make a little noise as it crosses my desk here.
Okay, is this good?
That's not bad.
All right, we're checking in technically here.
Okay, so remember, this is the sound of the rainbow, everyone.
So let's go from low to high. In this case, it's going to go from red to violet. And then one at a time. Then there's this nice harmony when they're all sounding together, which is a really interesting effect, different than when I just strike one at a time. When the whole choir, you might say, gets together of these nine singers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting how some of them are very close to each other. Now, I'm going to pick an excerpt from those and play the scale. And notice this. I'm going to start with the red-orange.
Okay.
It has all but one note of a major scale.
Hmm.
Now, I didn't alter things to make that happen that way. That's showing that our major scale is truly right there in the rainbow.
Hmm.
And we talk about things and we kind of take them for granted, but when you actually use the real science and do things, and you get the confirmation of the poetic, and the science and the poetic work together, there's a really nice musical high I get from that.
That's great.
Can you hear how coherently that sound, that major scale fragment was?
It was beautiful.
You know, it goes from an A flat up to E flat, and then it came back down, and then G, G, A flat.
Okay, so I want to go back into my level of understanding in a way. I do understand this. But what happened at the beginning of our talk today, I said that my energy was a little cluttered. And as you first ran through all of them, mm-hmm. and there was a little bit of that, what do you call it, not dissonance, but when...
The beat tone difference tones?
Yeah. What happened in my head is all of a sudden things realigned. I could feel the energy kind of moving and pulsing in my head, and I feel clearer now.
Mm.
So that, to me, was very exciting.
I wonder if it was the dissonances that helped clear your field rather than the nice consonant tones that
I'm playing. To me, there was a lot of action when you had the different tones. The first run, there was a lot of action in the air vibrationally, musically.
And this can be used in quote-unquote healing sessions or vibrational attunement sessions. You can take the top plate off that holds all of the chimes and move it around the body and move it around in the room and do like a sonic type of feng shui or like sonic saging by playing those notes.
Wow, I can believe that because I sure felt it in my head that time. So
a few
what about
of them
these?
Are really close to each other, like those two. For some people, it almost sound like almost the same note.
Almost the
or
same
two
note,
musicians
yeah.
that are just slightly out of tune.
So what is the difference between them?
I'd have to look at my math chart on that.
Oh, you don't have it all held
I
in
have
your
a
head.
Lot in my head. Anyway, so and there's other ones that are a greater distance apart between the lowest red note and the high violet.
So now tell me this. If we play this, does it have the same impact on us as seeing a beautiful rainbow? Do you know what I mean? Does it recreate that kind of wonderful
euphoria?
I don't
think this one does. And there's always, to me, a sense of awe in looking at the rainbow because it's going to disappear in any minute. As soon as the angle gets out of this 3-degree angle between 41 and 44 degrees or so, all of a sudden the rainbow disappears, and there's the sun is still up, and the same amount of moisture is in the sky, but you keep trying to find it, you know, and also like when you're driving toward the rainbow, and it's always just out ahead. But I can keep striking this and sound it. So
well,
in
true.
A certain way, it's not elusive. And that elusiveness has a magnetic draw to it, a wonder that's a little bit different. Now, in my mind, I'm really intrigued by the sound because, you know, I had this made.
Yeah.
So, and I understand the intricate math of it and what some of the meanings of the relationships between the different colors are mathematically. It's very intriguing. So there's some intellectual knowledge that stimulates my interest.
Hmm. How did you get to be in the sound world? I know you're a musician. You were a musician first.
Yeah.
What drew you to the sound world? I use the term sound healing, and you don't like that, but that seems to
well,
be the coined term.
I think we have to be very careful in using the word healing in terms of does something heal? Would one of these tones heal? I mean, I would say no. That's not what they're about. They're about awakening in the person or the client, or the person that wants to change something or alter something or enhance something. To awaken something, awaken that healing response and their connection with the Creator.
Hmm.
And if there are blockages in their body, I feel, or in their energy field, or in their aura, or in their meridians, or in their chakras, then in some way, perhaps they're not letting the full flow of the Creator flow through them from wherever that comes from. From on high, down low, you might say in a downloading, or the energies from the earth coming up from somebody.
Or just from our past experiences preventing us from being in the flow.
Yeah, so the life experience is so complex that many things happen that can shut down aspects of that flow.
And so how did you get into actually knowing that music will do that to people outside of having a passion for music yourself?
Well, my flow got shut down because when I was born, a certain part of it, my right arm was paralyzed in the birth process. So later in life, for me, starting in the, especially in the 70s, I started going to healers to work on myself. And what happened is that ignited the healing response, and you might say, in my ability to be a facilitator for healing situations, using a variety of techniques. And I studied with a lot of people. So that information, by having to pursue working on myself and the changes that I went through, that fed back into my music, and I brought it into my music. And that got me curious and reading different things, hanging out with different people, seeking different kinds of experiences. So in a way, my birth experience sort of, I wouldn't say it's a guarantee, but it more greatly ensured that I wouldn't just do music, that I would walk a path that embraced the vibrational therapeutic and the raising of consciousness, which is really what these tools are about.
It's really about self-empowerment, isn't it?
You know? And empowering others. I mean, they get the self-empowerment. But if I play these tools for somebody, my intent is to empower people.
Yes, I know. And also, you're quite famous for your tuning forks.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a bit about those? Because I've seen you, I've experienced your healing with tuning forks as a tool, again, to shift the resonance, shift the frequency, and help people back into themselves, right?
Well, I started with tuning forks as a musician. And almost everybody in the from the 20th century on usually had at least one tuning fork, an A440, that we'd all use as a reference note and tune.
What does 440 mean?
440 cycles per second,
okay.
Vibrations per second. And once that became a tuning standard back in 1917, that if anybody had one tuning fork, which most musicians would have, that's what they used as a reference. And then I began to explore planetary tones converted into tuning forks from the Hans Cousteau research in the 70s. And I got all kinds of tuning forks made to the planets and started applying those tuning forks in various kinds of hands-on modalities or...
Oh, wait a minute. Where did you get the sounds of the planets?
I got them from a company that used
that
the Hans Cousteau
planets?
that took the rotations of the planets and their cycles and converted that into cycles per second, which could be translated into tuning forks.
Okay.
And then I started applying that, playing them around people, around myself, and putting them on points on the body like acupuncture points and chakras and such. And for years got really wonderful results, and it was a lot of fun for me to work like that compared to, let's say, doing polarity therapy or other types of modalities that I respect and that I studied, but it kept me in sound. And then little by little, I got the more research I did in this, the more I wanted to have tuning forks made to these things that I was mathematically researching.
So when you were using the tuning forks, you were using them over people and finding results in terms of releasing blocks in their own energy flows.
And their consciousness would shift, and they would have openings that you wouldn't expect. You know, I remember one of my piano students had carpal tunnel challenges, and just before a music lesson, so we suggested that we play with the tuning forks, and, you know, he didn't have a problem. Now, I'm not
that
claiming
wonderful?
That I, anyway, I would not say that I healed that, but I think playing with the tuning forks introduced vibrations into his body, and those tuning forks were touching his body.
Wow.
You know, and vibrating in such a way that some kind of blockage just cleared up. We had a wonderful piano lesson, and you know, he wasn't disturbed. Exactly. Now, there's all the things that he did that led up to that moment. And I showed up at the appointed time with tuning forks, which is fun for me.
But the body is a resonant chamber too, isn't
it?
And you're talking resonant living. So it makes sense that it's a great way to flip him out of a congestion, hey?
Yeah, it did in some level.
Well, let's hear some tuning forks.
Well, here's something that's kind of fun. This is one that's... I also, in teaching about the mysteries and the sacred numbers, this is the 153, which is the magical number for Mary Magdalene. So, makes a D sharp. So, the Magdalene in Greek when you convert the letters of that expression into numbers and add it up, you get 153, which has a lot of definitions in the sacred texts. And in the ancient days, they expressed the square root of 3 not as a non-rational ratio the way it is now. In other words, it goes on forever, non-rational, but as a ratio of two whole numbers. And the most popular two numbers that were used for the square root of 3 was the number 265, which I'll play, which is a C note. And there's a lot of overtones coming off this tuning fork. So we're hearing high notes as well as the fundamental.
And then, I just want to say to listeners, pay attention to what happens in your body with these different notes that come up, because you can really feel the effect of a C note, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
And the D sharp.
Now, in the ancient days, they called the square root of 3 the 153. Hmm. That was their term for the square root of 3. They said the 153.
Wow, I didn't.
So if you play 265, which would represent the height of the square root of 3 in height, it's a shorter fork and higher frequency. And the 153, the lower note, represents the cross beam of the Vesica Pisces. So basically, we're creating a square root of 3 to 1 ratio, which is an important ratio in sacred geometry. Chartres Cathedral is elaborately developed out of the square root of 3 and the various square root of 3 ratios, as is our eyes, the geometry of our eyes.
Oh, really?
So what I like to do with tuning forks is express these interesting ratios in sound so people can hear things that they would normally see in a building or see in an object.
And in that building, there would be a sense of the vaulted or the etheric or something.
Mm-hmm. The proportions of the window or the proportions of the floor.
Would give you a certain feeling.
Because that sacred ratio is being represented in architecture and creates a certain resonance by its proportions. Well, I'm also wanting to do those sacred proportions in music.
Great.
Getting back to sound first, because I believe that it came out of sound first.
Hmm.
So here when you hear these two together, here's the square root of 3 musically.
He's hitting.
So if you take two circles and overlap two equal circles at the halfway point, you get this almond-shaped area in the middle they call the Vesica Pisces.
Hmm.
And these two tuning forks represent the height and the width of the Vesica Pisces.
Oh, I see.
And so this is the first gesture in studying sacred geometry that people learn to draw when they're designing anything. And in the study of sacred geometry, it all comes out of playing with the Vesica Pisces and then moving from there into more complex.
And that's the creation piece, is it?
Mm-hmm. Because it represents the area of non-duality between the two circles, the overlap of the two, electric and magnetic working together, and a zone of non-duality. And a lot of times you'll see the Christ figure inside the Vesica Pisces shape. So that's like a holy of holies, a holy territory. And the openings on our body are vesicas, our eyes, our mouth, and so on. So expressing that musically is kind of a primal, original thing to do. Back in terms of the creation and the origins. So I like to tell the story of creation, sort of the cosmologies and such, using tuning forks tuned to different sacred numbers to express those relationships.
And our bodies kind of rise into those sounds, do they?
They can. Or it'll just, maybe we don't know what happens if something happens. It certainly communicates to the water in and around the cells in our body. And since we're mostly made of water, sound has a great big impact. As you hear from people who've been in the water with whales and dolphins, and what happens to their body from hearing those sounds in the water medium. So I always recommend that when people work a lot with tuning forks, they drink a lot of water, good water, the right kinds of water, so that they hydrate their body, because the sound really does move that stuff around.
Do you want to play a couple more of these?
Another one that's very interesting is to express the golden mean relationship. So I'm going to take the unfamous number 666, which if you converted it to light would be a violet light. And that represents the male solar energy, and 1080, which is the in miles, would be the radius of the moon. In average miles, 1,080 miles. And if I play those two together, I get 1.621, 621, 621, like that. Basically, a golden mean relationship between them. Mm-hmm. Now, the listeners might not hear this note, but by playing those two together, we get a difference tone of 414, and we get a summation tone of 1,746. 1746 is called the number of fusion. So when you take the 666 and add that to the 1080, the male and the female, the alchemical result is the child, you might say, that's created from that is the musical child 1746, which represents the number of fusion. I'll play that one. It's a very high A note. And I'll let the 666 sound by itself so somebody can just hear it by itself. Here's the...
And it's violet.
Yeah, if you convert it into light, it would be a violet. And then the 1080 would be a cyan blue turquoise color. Here's the 1080, the C sharp. This is a C sharp. Now, I discovered something with this note in terms of science. It's very, very interesting. An octave lower is 540, and another octave lower is 270, and it gets down to 135 as its fundamental lowest whole number.
Okay.
And in India, most of the meditation music is tuned to different kinds of C sharps, all kinds of different C sharps, as their main do. They call it sa. And they found gongs and bells that are hundreds of years old that are tuned to these auspicious C sharps. I found by using this particular one and putting it into the Indian music tuning system that has basically 22 notes to the octave, that every one of the numbers is a harmonic number of hydrogen. So I'm planning on making music based on Indian ragas, played with different kinds of instruments to this specific tuning system, so people can resonate with the number one element, which is hydrogen. And I would not have known that had I not studied the Indian music system and studied hydrogen and knew what those numbers were. And by just running the numbers through the musical system and looking at the sound frequencies in different octaves, all those sound frequency numbers all spoke to key numbers of the mathematical matrix of hydrogen. So potentially what that means is that playing music with those tones can talk to the prime element in all of life. And who knows what might happen from that. But to me, that is a very right-on place to investigate.
That's very exciting. So it's like many of us trying to find the essence of our being can be helped in that kind of way.
Yes. Yeah. Now, one of the things I did in a project with Judy Cole is we took these numbers, 414, 666, 1080, and 1746, and played them all at once into through tone generators into an oscilloscope, and the geometries that were created were beautiful.
Really?
And then we changed the volume. She changed the volume of each of the notes lower and higher. And as the volumes of each of these four notes changed, the geometries would rotate and spin and change shape and shape shift right in front of you. It was very fascinating. So I back engineered that whole scene down to like a Fibonacci type series. You know, in Fibonacci series, you add each two numbers and you get the next one. One and one is two, and one and two is three, and two and three is five, and it goes on forever until it gets up to numbers like 8/5 is 1.6, and it creates the golden mean proportion, which is this musical minor sixth interval, like a C up to an A flat or an E up to a C. That's basically in musical terms. So when I engineer,
what does the golden mean do for us to know that? I mean, I saw, what's his name, Wayne Dyer was giving a talk on PBS. And he had a golden mean behind him all throughout his time.
Well, it's the main ratio that connects all of physical life in the universe from the microcosm to the macrocosm. We have various aspects of the golden mean in the ratios of the planets and how they move and so on and spin. And then in our bodies, all the different joints and areas of the body are all basically phi ratios from one joint to the next are in the 1.618 ratio.
Oh, wow.
And all the insects, animals, fish, mammals, reptiles, all of them. And you do studies and measure all the parts of their body and do a schematic of their body like you would like an automobile in a computer program. You see all this phi ratio running through all of life. It's the ratio that unites all of physical life.
Wow. So and if you're actually hearing it,
yes.
If we're actually hearing it, it strengthens our sort of unity with all life, or
And I do attunement sessions with people that are completely based on using Fibonacci ratios built on different fundamental tones to remind them of that inherent harmony that they were created with. You know, and it's a musical reminder. And, you know, sometimes that reminder is enough to wake up a process in somebody towards seeking more wholeness, not that they're not whole, but that they experience it. That's my distinction in that regard.
So have you studied physics and...
Casually. I got a lot of private...
Mathematics.
Yeah, I got a lot of private tutoring.
That's great.
From your dear friend Bob Hoover, too.
Yeah.
And others,
our,
you know,
wonderful
who...
wonderful sound guy.
Yeah, and other... And physicists. And I take my problem or challenge to them. I say, what is this symbol? What does this mean? They give me a download. Then I go home and get crazy with my calculator and discover things because I'm looking at the world musically.
Yes.
Things that they don't discover because they're not looking at the world that way.
Well, I love you. Your company is called Resonant Living, and I love that because that's what a lot of us would strive for. As you come into your house, everything is created to, or everything's placed to create that movement of frequency, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So shapes, let's jump to these guys. Yeah. These are really humongous, everybody.
The
you
first,
can just step over there.
Okay. I think I'll play the large one first. There's 50 notes in this. And there's a table that Barbara Hero did a lot of work on. It's called the Lam Doma Matrix. And Pythagoras supposedly taught that. And it's an ancient table of harmonics, basically all the overtones and undertones that you get 1 through 16, creates this big grid that's 16 by 16 and it has 256 notes in it.
Wow.
But a lot of those notes are octaves of each other. So if you'd remove all of the octaves and put all the different notes into one octave, you get a 50-note scale. So I made one of my desktop chimes to be one octave. That means going from one C to another C. In this case, I go from C to C, literally. There's 50 notes in the octave instead of 13, you know, counting the octave that we get on the piano.
Right.
So it's very interesting to hear that. I'm going to sound that from low to high, and then I'll also sound it from high to low.
Excellent.
And I can sound it going both directions.
Just wait a minute, just for a second. I just want to remind everybody at home to sit quietly with your body and feel what happens when you hear this, because he's going to do it again. Okay, Randy, you're on. So that's one octave in the traditional sense.
Mm-hmm. Wow. One octave with 50 notes in it.
Isn't that amazing?
You could potentially, you know, put that on a synthesizer, but, you know, it would take 50 notes, you know, to do that. And the notes are really close together. So a lot of times when you hear them by themselves, it feels like two musicians that are only slightly out of tune and so close together that many people would consider that they're playing in tune. I'll give you an example.
Ah.
There's a little bit of wobbling
yeah.
that you get, which is the difference between the frequencies shimmering. It is not.
But I remember at a workshop that you gave, Randy gives great workshops on sacred geometric activities like this and music and so on. But I remember you talking about the temple bells, you know, the two little ones that clang together and how there is a little dissonance between them.
And they even some of them are even built with a dissonance within the bell, striking the bell in different places in more than one note.
But the dissonance is functional, right?
Yes, it's intentional. Mm-hmm. It's not that they didn't have it together and couldn't get
Yeah, I remember. I can't remember exactly what it's supposed to do, but I know it's important.
Well, some of those dissonances produce notes that are different brainwave frequencies. Mm-hmm. So like if you wanted to be in the theta brainwave region from 4 to 7 hertz, that's below our hearing. But you can hear two notes that the difference between them is 4 to 7 hertz. So there's that aspect. And then in the Tibetan bowls, you don't have a set of seven typically for, let's say, addressing seven chakras. I'm not saying that there are only seven, but the seven classic chakras, they may have four bowls. But how you combine the bowls gives you some indifference tones that affects the other chakras. So it's not like you have a bowl for each chakra. You have four bowls that in combined in different ways address much more than even the, just the seven classic chakras. And many of the different bells, I've been studying the Chinese bells quite a bit lately, and to decode what the musical system was and what they were thinking and what they were tuning to. And they typically had bells that were tuned in like minor thirds apart. On the same bell, there'd be two different notes. You strike in the middle of the bell, you get one note. You strike on the rim or somewhere else, you get another note.
So people played with precision.
And they knew exactly how to cast those bells.
Hmm.
Fantastic. 3,000-year-old bells that are made to a degree that no one yet in the world has been able to improve on.
Hmm.
We're talking about the tuning. The metallurgy even is hard to improve on.
Are they still creating them, or are they just left
here and there? But a lot of the art of, in Tibet, a lot of the master bell makers aren't around. And in Nepal, many of them making bells have lost the art of how to mix the metals at what time of day. And when you do the bells properly,
alchemy.
A lot of times the metals are buried in the ground to cure the metals.
Hmm.
They're made at certain times in the planetary cycles.
Hmm.
If you have silver in the bell, you have to pay attention to what the moon cycles are, because moon actually affects the element silver.
Hmm.
And copper is affected by Venus.
Hmm.
And so on. There's many different metal combinations, each having planetary influences that have been proven scientifically.
So, Randy, is that what you're doing with these? Are you paying attention to the metal creation?
Oh, I would like to. I have that in mind, but right now we're using a special alloy aluminum that's processed in a proprietary way to get some very interesting tone colors.
Hmm.
But eventually I want to have mixed metals that have really interesting properties to them.
Hmm.
Like I was a trumpet player, and many of my trumpets were made, flugelhorns and cornets and things, were made with special metals in the bells so that I could get different tone qualities. It may look like a trumpet, but not all trumpets that look alike sound alike, even played by the same player.
Wow.
So what those bells are made from is a big part of the science of, you could say healing, or the beauty in music comes from tone color.
Hmm.
Timbre is the word for that. And different harmonics, according to the materials that something is made, whether it's a skin on a drum, or the wood on a drum, or metal instruments, or stringed instruments, and what the string is made of,
mm-hmm.
like
and
guitar strings.
Life in it. It's got to have life.
It's got to have a life force and a feeling, and be able to evoke with a good player, or a trained player, or somebody who's just capable, beautiful tones. And a lot of that has been missed in some of the instruments these days.
Hmm.
The notes are there, the rhythms are there, certain melodies are there, but the real supreme beauty and tone quality is missed, and I'm looking for that.
Hmm.
So these different sound instruments that I'm making is also a quest to hear the frequencies and their ratios, but also to hear these beautiful tones that shimmer in the room and do things that I don't know.
And are they? Is it happening
really
for you?
Yeah. What was that?
Is it actually happening for you?
Are
you
able to? Yes, it is. Yeah, and people have these, and they hang them in offices, and they play them, and a lot of interesting things happen.
What happens if they hang them in an office? This fellow
shifts.
With
Steve Barish, who was doing work with a lot of Fred Bell's different kinds of receptors and tools that he's made, just got one of my hydrogen chimes, and he found that he was able to clear somebody in 20 minutes that normally took an hour.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's because vibrationally the person got really, energized or...
Or
resonant,
or cleared, or a blockage, or they heard something unusual enough to shift their position.
Wow, that's great.
I'll play that one.
So you are actually selling those?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Great. Yeah, I'd like to hear that one. Now tell us about...
So this one is made to the 34 spectral lines of hydrogen that are visible, called the Balmer series, and 31 of them are violet. There's one red-orange, one cyan-blue, and one blue-violet, and all the rest are different shades of violet. So I'm going to play that one from high to low, because this is an interesting effect.
Well, that's really something. My body is buzzing. What's going on with you listeners?
You know, and if you get to hear it for like 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
that's sometimes you have to play these for a little bit of time to get a wave going, you might say, or to create a resonance and let the sounds bounce off the room and interact with it. I mean, that's a short time to experience it. not that something interesting couldn't happen in a short time, but if we played that for 20 minutes, most people are really affected in a positive way.
Well, can you
way.
Do it one more time? Because I feel like it's still going, too. You can hear it. What do you call this one?
Well, basically, it's the visible spectrum of hydrogen.
My, so this is one of
made
our prime.
Made audible. As a first, I don't know anybody who's been thinking quite like that.
So you don't do them for a purpose besides your own exploration, your art, your invention, your way of bringing down information from the universe.
I'm offering them. And I get intuitive feelings and thoughts about what they could be used for. And I certainly want them to bring harmony to somebody, mm-hmm. A greater harmony or an attunement. I think this one is really excellent for meditating. I mean, if it's talking to hydrogen like that, hydrogen is the molecule of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So to me, this one activates consciousness in a
That's wonderful.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. I'm not making a claim because we haven't done tests and paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and such to see what happens.
But you get results from people who use them, right?
Yeah, people mm-hmm. reporting back from the field what's been happening, and it's been all positive so far.
Great. Well, it's very beautiful.
It has an eerie kind of sound to it, that particular one.
It does, but it moves up. I feel it moving up. Eerie to me could be a little depressing or something. But
well, do you feel uplifted by
hearing? I do,
very. I should put words in your mouth.
Very, no. For this one, I feel... there's sort of updrafts of energy, but I feel it right through my body. This one, my body, the longer one, the one mm-hmm. from sea to sea.
The longer one, yes.
From sea to shining sea.
Yeah, really. Literally.
I found it really in my limbs in a big way.
Uh-huh.
And this one, the small one on the desk, when you first did it,
mm-hmm.
That really rattled. And I think there was a lot of, I guess I call it dissonance, but you probably have a better word. But there must have been a lot of that in there because it really shook that part of my head, my brain. Mm-hmm. And then you said later it has an influence on the brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you said that about the temple bells.
The brain waves and the difference tones.
Yeah.
And in that rainbow, out of 9 notes, 2 of them are 2 of the notes that are found in the Balmer series.
Hmm.
The red-orange note and the cyan-blue note in the rainbow are both found in the... hydrogen chimes that I just played. Isn't that interesting? To me, it's interesting that out of the 9 notes in the rainbow, 2 of the 9 come from hydrogen. The other colors would come from other elements, like nitrogen and sodium and whatever, in that kind of way. So I feel the presence of hydrogen as the creator in the rainbow. They say the rainbow is the Ark of the Covenant. Ark could also be spelled A-R-C, instead of A-R-K. Like an arc, like an arc welder, a spectrum, an electromagnetic spectrum. And I find that fascinating place to investigate. And these are tools to be played in homes and in various kinds of centers and places where people meditate and where I play them with a microphone in a class where I'll hold the microphone up to it and let it go through the sound system and amplify it.
And so what happens, people feel it very deeply.
And they feel the notes all over the room.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
great.
I'm working on some recordings so that people could put it on a CD and loop these sounds around in their sound systems.
That would be wonderful. We can hardly wait.
What might happen? Hopefully the plants will like it too. That's a good sign.
Yeah, really.
And animals have been responding very nice. And sometimes the birds come around when I play these.
Wow, that's
great. I like
great.
That. That's a sign to me that, not that I can prove that the bird came here because I played the sounds. But it always makes me smile when the birds come around and are curious. And
well, you're tuning
around.
With nature. And
like, what's Randy doing now?
So talk about the world of sound. What's going on around the world? And you don't have to know everything about it, but it's opening up, isn't it? More and more people are investigating what the sound therapies. I'm trying not to use the word sound healing, but that seems to be the most common phrase that's used.
Yeah. Well, I think we could say the word, but we're not saying necessarily that the sound is doing the healing, but that sound in various ways, especially also with people's voices, when they make the sounds of their own voice and connect, That's been very profound for people. Then there's listening to sound.
You mean like toning?
Toning, whatever syllable.
Singing your name.
Or, yeah, anything like that. Yeah. All of that's helpful, even in workshops, singing, each person singing their name and listening to their name being sung back by people has an emotional impact. Chanting, and people have been chanting sacred chants, whether they use Sanskrit or Hebrew or Greek or some other language, Japanese, Tibetan. The power and the sound and the phonetic sounds, and we heard about sounds in Aramaic that Yeshua or Jesus used in his healing, power sounds that were done in Aramaic. It's interesting, and even listening to the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, there's sound healing, quote-unquote, I believe, in the essence of what that's really about. So
how about the pyramids? Is it true? Do you think it's true that they moved the big blocks to build the pyramids with sound?
I don't think so. I believe so.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure that they tapped into how to do that. And the way those rooms resonate, they chose different material for different rooms based on different kinds of resonances.
So you just got back from Egypt and a little time in the pyramids and so on. What can you share with us?
Yeah, we led 34 people on a trip there, and we were singing in all of these temples and making all kinds of sounds, and I had tuning forks going all around in the temples. It was fun. You know.
So what happened? What was the impact?
There were lots of resonances and notes. People would strike notes with low volume and they'd really kind of take off. The room would amplify as if you put a microphone on it. And some of the most profound effects happened when I would get in the right sweet spot in the room and find the tone. And with very little effort, especially in the low register, I could tone and the whole room would resonate. I did that for about an hour in the sarcophagus or the coffer in the king's chamber and many different temples there where the sounds that I made more than the room that I was in resonate. Some of them even outdoors and people could hear it. Who were not inside in the room, they're outside, they could hear it.
What sounds did you make? Did they just come
really
through you?
Low,
or were you?
I wasn't paying too much attention to the phonetics. I was trying to get into a real low register, like where you hear Tibetan chanting, and find a note. And I would tone a little bit till it's like singing in the shower. You find that note really rings as if it's amplified. And then I'd stay with that note. I tried other things, but mostly I tried to find what I would consider to be a fundamental resonant note of the room and then get on that note and sing that note for a while. And if I could go up to 20 minutes or half an hour or more, that's when really interesting effects started happening. And a lot of the sacred sites were supposedly geared around sounds in a very narrow register that could be activated by low male voices because we need a certain amount of mass. So the temples and our body temples are designed to resonate. So the tuning forks are taking off all over the world, people discovering and playing with tuning forks. I'm working with acupuncturists and getting tuning forks to them to use in addition to and sometimes instead of needles. And they're putting the tuning forks on acupuncture points.
They actually put them on the body. Oh, they do.
Yeah. Some of the applications are direct application of the fork on the body, touching the body. Other times the forks are sounding around the body over certain sites and sometimes sounding around the needle itself and vibrating the needle with the fork. So I have quite a few acupuncturists. They're really intrigued in that. And they're using sound with animals. You were using the tuning forks made to the Paul Nogier tissue rejuvenation frequencies. Certain vets are using that with animals. That's another application. People are meditating to different tuning forks.
How do you meditate to a tuning fork?
By striking it and listening to it and concentrating on the sound. Or singing along with the tuning fork in a comfortable octave and matching the tone and seeing where that note takes you, like a magical carpet. It might take you somewhere that you might not go with your voice, just freely playing. But then the tuning fork is acting like a key that's calibrated a certain way, and you can ride on that key and follow the sound and see where it takes you. So that's a lot of fun.
That is a lot of fun. Tell me this. Do you think that you're getting awakened to memory that you've had? Is this a universal memory?
I believe so. And I've had past life readings and things of that kind to unlock and uncover and investigate possible knowledge so I don't have to reinvent the wheel. And it's very intriguing to work that way. I believe that I have not even tapped into places that I have been before.
Hmm. Where do you see it all going? Your own or the world's? Or?
Well, there's the, you know, the use of sounds in healing circles and singing circles and chanting and drumming. And I also want to include percussion because I spent a lot of my life studying percussion and applying rhythms. So what I'd like to see with my own music is music tuned in these different tunings, music that before that I used to do totally with equal tempered tuning, done in tuning systems built on different fundamentals that might open keys that just tuning to equal tempered tuning relevant to A440 isn't going to open certain doors.
So this is like we are amazing. We have storage of all kinds of brilliant ideas. You're saying kind of opening that kind of door, awakening us to be able to accept higher frequencies or radiate higher frequencies. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. And I recommend to a lot of musicians to try tuning to 432A. It's a little bit lower. And notice what happens. And one of the things that happens is the music feels more relaxed, that pitch is not so wound up. It's just slightly lower, less than an eighth of a tone. And that opens a different doorway that 440 doesn't open. And there's less tension in it, and it's more harmonious with our bodies, and it's in a natural state. And I'm finding in working that way with the 432, my piano is tuned to 432 and a different tuning system. That's a combination of perfect fifths, two different cycles of perfect fifths combined together. And I can play all the music that I normally played in equal temperament, but it has different resonances, and there's rich combinations that I didn't get before. And I believe that playing without changing the music, although it changes playing that because there's certain nuances that happen, and how if it affects how I feel, then I'm going to play differently. So you can't really get around that. I don't want to get around that. I'm looking for what are those magical notes that we could tune to that open up windows and doors that maybe some of the other notes don't open.
Right.
Like a key. You can go and have a key made, come home and realize it doesn't fit your house anymore because they didn't buff the key, you know, and it's a little bit rough. Well, I think some of the tuning forks are operating, and humans as tuning forks singing the right notes, open gateways. And that's one of the things that we did in these sacred sites. We'd get people together who had very good ability with their voices, toning and singing, and we felt a lot of good things were happening in the space. I actually saw light forming, the electric blue-white light forming on the ceiling of the King's Chamber while I was sounding.
How thrilling.
And I was familiar with that light because that's the light that's in the nucleus of the cells. And sort of the color of the electromagnetic field and the aura around the body. And I could see it faintly forming on the ceiling when I was chanting.
So that's exciting. I want to throw one last thing before we have to call it quits for today anyway. You were talking about the tones of the planets or the tones of the earth. So out there in the universe, there's an awful lot of music, is there?
Yeah.
Every heavenly body, every celestial body, every earthy body.
I think the bodies perhaps emit sounds. They say there's a note from the black hole. It's a B-flat note that's around a 456 point something hertz in one particular octave of it. But normally it's way below hearing. And a note that comes out of the Milky Way, 4,303 hertz, based on Edgar Ostrander's research. And I make chimes and bells and tuning forks and things to that.
So what happens when people hear that?
Some people type of familiarity. The Milky Way note is less than a tenth of a hertz away from the note that Ali Akbar Khan uses to tune when he plays music. He uses 268.8 for his C sharp.
And why?
Because he says that that's the note he hears. And 268.9375 is the Milky Way. That's really close.
That's really close. So do you think that all of us hear a note inside?
I believe we can and that we do, but whether people pay attention to that or not, or whether they're distracted by the noise, increasing noise levels of their own thoughts, and when their nervous system gets tense, there's sounds that people hear and ringing in their ears. So I think there's a lot
and
of
sometimes
noise.
Ringing in your ears or sounds in your ears are evidence of hearing higher thought as well.
And some of it also is a wound up nervous system.
Right, yeah.
There's a common, and you need to explore it. And I think it's a good thing for people to explore. I think when people do get ringing in their ears and they really listen, maybe it's there to get them to listen.
Right, I'm questioning that.
Get into the sound current, you know, and really listen and meditate on that. I think that's the most profound meditation that anybody could do is to meditate on the sound current and flow with that.
Well, if people want to get in touch with you and learn more about this or buy some of your products, these are amazing. It's really hard to tell what they look like on the radio, but you've got pictures of them on your website.
Mm-hmm.
And some of Randy's jewelry and sacred geometric shapes, sounds, light, and so on. So where do people find you?
They could go to my primary website, universalsong.net, universalsong.net, and my email, universalsong@yahoo.com, and then send me their phone number as well in their email so that we can talk, because I'm into sound. I like to hear people's voices and know who they are. Not
and
so
what's your name again?
Randy Masters.
I've been friends with Randy for a long time, Bob too, so I'm just teasing, but you all need to hear his name as well. So I've really enjoyed this. This is a lot to learn in 1 hour, I'll tell you that, but I'm going to learn it. So
thank you for playing with me here in this resonant field.
It's fun. Your Bob, home is a resonant field. It's just wonderful. You've done a great job.
Kind of Santa's playland of sound.
Yeah, exactly. My guest today was Randy Masters, Paradigm Shifter, and I'm asking Randy, just to finish this show, Randy, with an experience with hydrogen. Many blessings. See you next week.